Howdy, everybody. Bob Tallman for No Spin Rodeo. No politics, no BS, just hard-hitting news and rodeo commentary from two of the most trusted sources in our sport. Kendra Santos, Tommy Joe Lucia. Listen up. Here we go.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 33. This is No Spin Rodeo. My name's Tommy Joe Lucia, and of course, we've got the rodeo superheroes with me, Kendra Santos and Greg Teagarden. We're here to talk to you for another hour, 2 weeks from the last time we talked to you for probably an over hour. Welcome to No Spin Rodeo. Thanks for joining us. Good morning, team. How are you?
I'm great. You?
I'm peachy, but so your power came on because you texted us a 911 that said power's off for 8 hours. Is that typical in California that you lose power for 8 hours?
It is. So here's the thing. PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, ever since, you know, in recent years when they were responsible for catastrophic wildfires, they now have the power line set that if a large bird lands on the power line, it shuts it off. And so then I get a text on my phone that says, we realize that you have no power. And they said, we expect to restore it 8 hours from now. So it came on literally 2 minutes before we got on to record. And that's pretty lucky.
So if an endangered bird lands on the power line, they shut the grid down.
That we received mail in the mailbox saying, this is the deal. This is why you're having so many power outages. It's a safety measure. Since all the wildfires.
Are you on the campaign crew for Gavin Newsom?
Let's see. Our motto is no politics and no BS. How far you want to go?
Well, that's a lot of BS, but whatever. Okay, we'll move on. So I'm glad you've got power. I'm glad you're at home. How's the family? Everybody good?
Everybody's great. Thank you. I just had an interesting weekend covering the inaugural Kojo Open, Cody Johnson's roping, that really super cool. He raised a ton of money with all the cowboy people in attendance for, I think it's called A Different Day, his wife Brandy's her charity of choice to help women, and also Texas 4-H, which I believe might be where they met. I'm not 100% about that, but it's Texas 4-H is very dear to both of them. But they also, like a few years ago, the last time George Strait, the king of country himself, had a epic team roping was in 2017. And Cody Johnson, you know, has arrived on the scene now. And he, you know, George Strait is like a hero to him that he looks up to in every way. And he just kept carrying all of his fellow team ropers and cowboy friends saying, we miss the Strait, we miss the Strait. So he brought it back. And Andrew Ward and Jake Long won it. And won trucks and trailers like the George Strait and 32.5 a man. It was very cool. Anyway.
Well, I got a shout out because my new place in Lipan, my neighbor is Corey Smothers, and his two boys won something there because I saw them getting buckles with Kojo. And that's our neighbor. So when those lights are on and he's roping, when they're roping all night long, I know it's because they're getting somewhere with their ropes. So congratulations to the Smothers boys for young men. And these are little guys, like, I don't know, their ages 10 to 12. But yeah, they won a little something too.
It's awesome.
So that's a cool event. Mr. Teagarden, you're on the road, but are things cleaning up in the disaster area, kind of around your hometown, around your area, or what are you hearing?
Yeah, I hear it's still a struggle for a lot of people out there. They're just not getting the help they need. And I mean, it's tough to get to places in there and, you know, it's not near a major city. So it's tough to get cranes and trucks and stuff out there to help clean up.
Yeah, a friend of mine took his food trucks. I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast, but he sent his food trucks out there. And his comment was, there's a lot of food that's going to waste because it's not being distributed, mm-hmm. which is the sign of, you know, it's often hard with big government and coordination. You know, my personal side of it is just try to help, but let people do what they're trying to do. They'll help take care of each other. You know, but I'm not going to get involved because here's what I did learn. I learned this in the school board. When I joined the school board to fix my school, my elementary school, my boys were going to go into, is that as, and I think we do a little bit of this in No Spin, as you start to learn the details of things, you often then see why people make the decisions they make. So I'm sure there are circumstances that are not helping and everybody's trying to do the right thing. Nobody's trying to not to let food spoil, but still that's the nature of a big entity involved in a struggle in the middle of nowhere on the side of the mountains where it flooded. So cool beans. Well, let's get this rolling with, you want to do, let's do feedback first since we ended with feedback, Greg. Let's do feedback first and then we'll hit some rodeo news.
Okay. So our first feedback comes from the 541. I love the show. Keep up the great work you guys do. I listen to every episode that you put out. And on episode 32, you were talking about not allowing other events to be scheduled over the top of national final events. As a committee member of a small rodeo, I have to think that is a terrible idea to have a policy like that. We have our date set for 2 to 3 years in advance for our events. We can't just change our dates at the last minute because another event is going on. Tommy Joe should understand that well. And let's be honest, most of those guys that are making the national finals wouldn't come to those small rodeos even if they were the same days. Also, where does it stop then? Do you say you can't have other events the same days as a Pendleton, Cheyenne, Houston, Fort Worth?
Well, I'm going to defend myself because I don't think it was me. If I recall the transcript, I think it was the Queen Bee that was a little more in favor of trying to make sure that those were cleared off. I think I said, well, hold on. I'm pretty sure I said it just can't be done and you can't do it and it's not going to happen. And I don't think, now I'll qualify that with saying that I don't think not even a finals. I don't think any two, as best you can, you shouldn't make it to where a person has to pick between two big events if it's a cumulative to the finals ever. I don't care if it's two regular season huge rodeos. Everybody should work as hard as they can, and I understand that there's circumstances that don't allow that, but as hard as they can to give everybody a shot at all of the money because that's how they get to Vegas. But
I had a point. I think we kind of missed the point last week. I think the point that was the thing that made that bad was here's the national finals that normally happens this weekend and they moved them and you made a big issue about, well, it's hard to find, you know, places and stuff and buildings and stuff. But I feel like because they are the ones that moved on top of the other events that they're kind of the issue because those events have been those weekends for years. So I don't see how the steer rope, you know, that steer roping event moving 2 weeks would definitely not have any kind of justification for clearing out events that week.
You little shufflers are stepping right into my loop.
Bring it in.
Okay, Black Widow. Spin us up and drop the venom.
Okay, so the thing about it is that for one, very grateful to have the feedback from everyone because we want to hear it, even if whether we all agree on every single thing or not, at least, you know, have the conversation is number one. And my point was talking about, I think the number one point is a national finals steer roping and a $10,000 added, which is somewhat rare air for a steer roping event for the next season, to penalize the guys who worked all year by them having to miss a very large rodeo that indeed they would go to is very unfortunate. So here's, I'm going to say, to kind of repeat myself, but with a new example. I have a new example for my bottom line. Is basically that I hope that we will make every effort not to make a guy have to choose between, and here's my flashing red lights example. The 2024 NFSR If a guy worked so hard all year long to qualify for that, and now you're saying to me that a guy who worked hard all year long to qualify in the steer roping for the turquoise circuit finals, he's got to choose between those two events, and his circuit finals largely impacts his 2025 world standings and also counts towards the national steer roping standings. That all counts to the world standings. So to me, one of you made the point that if it's something you work for all year long, and I'm saying with my example right here, these are two things people worked very hard for a whole year, and now you're going to make them choose. That doesn't feel right. And I'm just saying, if we could just all agree to make all efforts to avoid such fundamental conflicts for cowboys, we wouldn't be having this conversation if a large rodeo was scheduled on top of the NFR. Because why? Because that would never happen. So in fairness, like, God bless small rodeos. And you're absolutely right, ma'am or sir, whoever wrote that, that, you know, if it was a small rodeo, but we're not talking about a small rodeo. This is a large rodeo that has a large impact on another year-long race in the coming year. So, yeah, I'll just leave it at that. But it's a great conversation.
Yeah, well, and as it grows, you know, there's times in the season where people have to make choices. I think everything should be done that they can to not have that happen. I agree with that. But circumstances, there's a lot more to it than just routing this so it works for the Cowboys.
Always. There are entities, and when you have to, I completely agree with the fact that when you look at all viewpoints, you are more willing to compromise because you understand that everybody, it takes everybody to make the wheel go round. So,
and there'll never be anything go on during the NFR because the NFR, so the reason that the Las Vegas supports the NFR so much is because they bring a huge event right before Christmas to Las Vegas, which, by the way, nobody else wants to go to Vegas right before Christmas because most people are buying their Christmas presents. But we've created now a festival of Western lifestyle there that people go to and plan. And there's no other promoter in their right mind that would ever try to do a huge rodeo December 9th through whatever, because you're not going to sell any tickets unless you're including Mannheim Steamroller and Santa's riding a bull, right? So it's not going to happen anyway. The NFR is in the perfect spot. What's the next one, Greg?
Okay, a no spinner from the 417. When does a contestant have to declare a rodeo to count? Is it when they enter, or can they wait until the draw is posted?
Who's going first? You want me to go first?
Either way, it's when they enter. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's when they enter. They have to when they enter. They can't look at their draw in any of the disciplines. Now, there is two ways that if you call and you say, this rodeo needs to count, and it goes on the books, there's two ways that it gets taken off the books. One is a doctor's release. That waives that rodeo's eligibility. So if you doctor release out. The other one is if you happen to make a short go or a finals on the day you drew up for that eligible rodeo, it's a conflict and they pull it out. So yeah, if you put it down and enter and you make it, which may in the rough stock, I don't know, you tell me, Kendra, because you're a timey, but in the rough stock, boy, they'd probably pay a lot of attention to who's bringing stock there and what their odds are of drawing the wrong thing, because you could make that a rodeo. If you turn out, you lose a rodeo, right?
As far as I know, I mean, and you know, it's the age old, and by the way, I love every event. I do come from the timed event and my family, but I love it all. But
I know you do, yes. You're still a Honda, you're still a timey expert. You are.
Okay, they're all my people. But anyway, so like, well, I mean, I, you know, that's there is a whole huge conversation to be had here that, you know, as we all know about all the turnouts in the rough stock. And of course, in the timed events, if you get the stopper and the bulldogging, or the dragger and the team roping, or the kicking calf, it's see you at the next one. Tough shit. So, but yeah, if that's the case, if the rough stock guys, if they lose a rodeo, I mean, they might not burn a plane ticket. A lot of them won't burn a plane ticket to show up somewhere on a bull or a horse that they feel like they have no chance, of course, but that's a whole nother conversation.
But well, yes, it depends on how they think they don't have a chance. Cause I've seen timed event guys study and win with the bad draw. In the rough stock, however, there are guys turning out because they just don't think they can ride them. I guarantee you Ty Murray wouldn't like that too much. And that's
you just read, you read my mind, because Ty used to always tell me, you know, these are animals. They wake up on this side of the bed or that just like us. And I'm going to show up because they might have their day. They might have the day of their life that day. And I'm showing up, which of course, you know, he was showing up for three events. So when the odds were that he got, at least got a good one in one of it, but that was his, that was his outward philosophy. I'm going to show up and get on because they might have their day.
Now, if you're turning one out, that's, I just don't think it's right. I don't think it's right in any rodeo. I don't care what size rodeo, have one in the pen that runs off. But in theory, your judges are supposed to fix that. Now, if there's seven horses in the re-ride that run faster than the one you got a re-ride on, then there you have it. Okay. Anyway, so they have to notify when they enter on both sides, both ends of the arena, right? Yeah. Okay. Cool beans. I'm squeaking my chair a lot. Sorry, everybody.
All right. Just want to let everybody know the number 817-668-2395, or you could text us there or email us at nospinfeedback@gmail.com.
Have we been getting any text, or is it all emails?
They're mostly texts.
Oh, they're mostly text. Cool.
Yeah.
Everybody likes texting. I do too. All right, here we go. All right. Well, so queen, you're either the queen or I don't really think you spun us up and bit us on that one, so I can't really call you the Black Widow. So what you're the title thrower. What's our point of view for today?
You want to skip? Are we skipping rodeo news here?
Rodeo news.
So let's just hitting a few highlights because this is big. So the NFR back numbers were just announced. And it's always exciting, you know, for the rodeo moms and dads and grandmas. And, you know, the moms want to get their necklaces and their bracelets and all that kind of stuff with their kids' back numbers, which is, it's really fun. So I think that, you know, as we're in the business of the rest of the story, it's interesting because you have Shad Mayfield has the number one back number. And then rounding out the top five are Bronc Rider Damian Brennan, Wacy Shala, who's going to be at the NFR in the bull riding for the first time, 18 years old. Bronc Rider, Rider Wright, and TJ Gray, the bull rider. Well, back numbers are based on money won in the regular season. But for those, people are going to try to do the math, and it will not math. Because, so, Shad Mayfield won $295,000 this regular season. He won $286,000 on the calf roping, $9,276 between the team roping and the steer roping. So, but then they're going to be, well, Lam, why does he only have $224,000 in the all around? And it's back to only 70 rodeos can count toward the all around. And what a lot of people that are going for the all around for the first time have to learn the hard way is that you have to declare whether a rodeo counts for the all around or not. So that is, standalone money doesn't count, and only 70 for the all around. So that's that. But I do think it's interesting that Shad is number one. Junior Nogueira is second in the world all around race, and he's second in the healing world standings, but he's back number 28. Kind of interesting, you know, that there are 27 people who've won more money. Anyway. Back numbers. On the NFR, Bullfighters, Barrelmen, and Pickup Men were just announced. And I will whip through them. Bullfighters, Dusty Tuckness, Cody Webster, and Nathan Justice. John Harrison is in the barrel, which Houston's been having a lot of fun announcing that John Harrison is going to replace Leon Coffey after over 30 years of Leon being in the barrel at Houston. And then the pickup man, Canadian Tyler Kraft, Sean Calhoun, alternate Matt Twitchell. Big congratulations for everybody. Something that came up, and I know you had some comments on this too, but this is NFR number 16 for Tuck. But for years now, a lot of people, rodeo announcers, a lot of rodeo announcers for many years now have called Tuck the GOAT. And like, there's no denying like he's one of the all-time greats. No denying it. But I just happened to talk to my friend Joe Baumgartner the other day. And, you know, he fought bulls at 14 NFRs and 18 PBR finals. So I feel like there's so much great conversations could be had, but I think people need to really be careful about comparing eras or just automatically assuming that the great, you know, the next big thing that's going on right now is the greatest of all time. And I'm a huge Dusty Tuckness fan, and he's humble champion. He's warrior. He's amazing. But many years ago, people started calling him the GOAT. And I just think, you know, a lot of people doing that weren't even around to see like people like Joe Baumgartner's, you know, body of work, but it was extraordinary. 30 years of fighting bulls, and that's 32 finals. Like, that's incredible to be just forgotten about because he's yesterday's news.
I agree.
I just like to not forget.
I really like that. That's, you finally said something I think's really great. That's great. Just kidding. Here's the deal. I think this greatest of all time across the sports platforms is way too sloppy to be thrown around. I mean, if you start, they talk about Tom Brady, and on and on and on. And you can sit there in all these sports and go, hold on a minute. Did you ever see Joe Montana, right? I mean, so I think by this greatest of all time, maybe greatest in an era, I think you've got something there, you know, but I think we all should be careful of GOAT, right? Greatest of all time. Mm-hmm. You know, they same thing with Flint Rasmussen, you know, and Flint was great, absolutely great. But there was some very impressive entertainers before Flint smeared makeup on. Right. So I agree with you. And hold on, all you people, before you start texting us, nobody's saying that any of these people aren't great and potentially the greatest of all time. That may be your narrative. We're just saying greatest of all time. And I think you're saying, Kendra, that's a wide, wide net to be casting is all.
It's a grand statement. And I, along the same lines, would say that I feel like, well, for one, there's only one gold buckle, and I feel like the term world champion is in 2024 overused also. I'll leave it there on that.
Well, they use it for a marketing gimmick instead of an actual creds. But yeah, I agree.
But the bullfighters, barrelmen, picketmen were decided differently.
Yeah. Now remember, again, we've said this before, but we're going to remind everybody that the categories that Kendra just said are the ones that are voted. You know, those are the ones that are open for votes to go. The committee that runs the NFR handpicks at their discretion the other contract personnel, some of which have been there for 65 years or something. So, you know, it's okay. That's their choice. It's their event. And they're the ones that need to decide what they think the best production is for everybody. But these people earned a vote, right? However they earned the vote, they earned the vote and they got chosen. And I think that says a lot. Says a lot. So congrats.
For sure.
Who exactly are the voters in this situation?
They send out applications to,
I would say, top 25.
Yeah, that's who votes. It's the top 25. I was trying to understand the count, but I think it's the top 25. And Barrel Man, does that go out to? Yeah, I think it's the same thing. That's a good question. I should look into that.
Well, I would be shocked if it's not. And because recently the horses of the year and the timed events were announced also. And according to some of the winners that I've talked to so far, they said the top 25 in their event voted. And
I wonder if that's how it works for Veterinarian of the Year, right? Who votes that, right? Or if that's some interesting stuff that we probably will try to research and have for next
time. Yeah. I know people nominate them because I know in the past, you know, the Joe Beavers and Trevor Brazils nominated people, but
yeah,
that is, it's all interesting. And more congratulations are in order for Caleb McMillan, the 2024 Lindemann Award winner. And he's a 26-year-old young man from Soap Lake, Washington. And he won money in kind of an unusual combination of events. Most of it in the bull riding, but also won money in the calf roping, steer wrestling, and steer roping. He won right at $50,000 this year. And the Lindemann Award is definitely a throwback award. I think it's extra cool. I know the history of it was that the PRCA media department actually came up with it after Bill Lindemann died an untimely death. But the criteria is to win at least $1,000 in at least three events, including at least one from each end of the arena, which is big time, you know, back in the day stuff, because today, of course, it's, you know, mostly single event specialists. And back then, working both ends of the arena was much more common. So it's guys now today who you know are at the rev stock and the timed events. It's a rarity anymore. So congratulations to Caleb McMillan. That's a big deal. One last note I was going to make is that three-time PBR world champion Silvano Alves just announced his retirement. 527 career rides, 2022 PBR teams, squad, he was on the winning team, and he won close to $7 million. That is out of this world cool. So congratulations to someone.
That's like 7 gabillion in Brazil dollars.
Well, and think about the profit margin when they have, you know, a limited number of events during the year that they can book their tickets January 1st for the whole year, you know, and get, I mean, their profit margin, the percentage of their profit margin is leaps and bounds ahead of any rodeo cowboy, even bull riders. So it's really, really cool. Good for, I mean, almost $7 million.
I think it's cool. I think that if you're going to win $7 million and you're Brazilian, these guys can win that kind of money. Maybe they'll go put a little effort into learning English.
A lot of them do pretty well. My goodness, old Paulo Crimber, who has the MVP dad award. John just won the MVP from PBR teams, right? And yep. But Paulo now, who was, when I was working for the PBR, he was always out at the pool doing 10,000 sit-ups and laps of the pool with Adriano. He translates English.
I know they translate. Yeah. It's just a personal thing. If you're right, people want to hear from people. And I think if you have the opportunity to win millions of dollars, figure out how to communicate with your fans besides through a translator. That's just a personal thing. Sorry about that.
No, I think it's cool. I think what you're saying is cool. What I think is endearing that I would hope that I could get through to the Brazilians is that it's very endearing for me to watch and listen to them. Even if it's broken English, it's very sweet because they're trying. And even if they use a wrong word or the wrong tense or some little thing, so what? It's very, very sweet. And I know that, you know, when Adriano and Paulo and those guys were around all the time, you know, I learned a few words, you know, in Portuguese, you know, obrigado and different things, you know, that just sort of out of respect and in fun so that we could say a few words to each other. You know, when Adriano didn't speak a word of English when he arrived, and now he's, you know, totally fluent, but
he was good in a hurry because there was maybe a little bit more level of respect for the opportunity too. That's all I'm saying.
Well, guys who came from dirt houses and made millions, Mm-hmm. It's not lost on them, the opportunity. Yeah. So very cool.
That's all I'm saying. So here we go.
Shall we dive into point of view?
If you're ready for it, is there anything else I missed you could call to my attention? You stole all my news. So
sorry.
You can steal everything in point of view too. Go ahead.
All right. Okay. Working headline. All circuits are busy. Right now, you know, if you turn on the Cowboy Channel, you're seeing circuit finals, which is great. And but let's talk PRCA circuit system, because this is circuit final season for sure. I don't know. My personal history and my personal timing just so happened. So the PRCA circuit system, for just a tidbit of history, was put together in 1975. And it was divided into 12 geographic regions, you know, set up for, it was created for contestants who were not out there on the full-time rodeo trail, right? Who also, by the way, have always made up the majority of the PRCA membership. And, you know, in some cases they had home obligations, maybe a day job, maybe they had a family ranch, they were raising a family, you know. Some were just, you know, as good talent wise, some couldn't make it out on the big trail. There were all different reasons, but it was created for people who were not full time. You know, they call them weekend warriors or whatever, but again, folks, this is the majority of the PRCA membership to this day. So, I went to work straight out of college at the PRCA headquarters in Colorado Springs in 1987. And my first roommate in an apartment up the hill, was the PRCA Circuits and Pro Judging Administrative Assistant for a very long time. And she worked under Jack Hannum, who was the Director of Circuits and also an NFR steer wrestler and calf roper. But the first Dodge National Circuit Finals Rodeo was held that spring, 1987, in Pocatello, Idaho. And I remember that Holt Arena being absolutely packed on the university, the campus on Idaho State's campus. To this day, it's two contestants from each circuit. We've added Canadian circuit. In 2016, we added a circuit from Mexico, but now maybe we don't. Is this correct? We don't have a circuit from Mexico, but we take one.
Yeah, let's add a little clarity here because I needed it. For one, the circuit system for me was pretty disenchanting, and I've been in this business for 35 years. It's like, well, so what, you know, what makes it relevant? I think if we have some conversation in doing a little research, I think the circuit system is relevant. Now, a couple things I would bring to bring to your attention. They actually tried the circuit system in 1974, and they did it with four circuits. They basically cut the U.S. down into four different pieces, basically circuit A, B, D, and E. E was, I don't even know where C was, but E, according to the map, was everything from Texas east, basically. And then you're right, in 74, they launched it. But my point is, you're right, it was the circuit finals. So the accumulating event of all the circuit rodeos and circuit finals was initially called, wasn't it the Ram?
The Dodge National Circuit Finals.
Dodge Radio. National Circuit Finals. And then, let's see, I've got some notes on that where it started. So the Dodge National Circuit Finals in 87 at Pocatello. Then it was the Ram Circuit Finals that went to Oklahoma City and Kissimmee, right? It was the Ram Circuit Finals. And then it moved to Colorado Springs as the Ram National Circuit Finals Rodeo. But it is now, which I don't know why I didn't realize this. This is how stupid I am, but it's the NFR Open, right? I mean, yeah. And I knew the NFR Open was attached to the circuits, right? But I never really, I guess it was just too plain to understand that that's just the rebrand of the National Circuit Finals.
And by the way, there's been a lot of scuttle and different opinions, a variety of opinions, a range of hot emotions about using the name NFR Open. You know, Some people are like, that's blasphemy, you know, or whatever. And so,
oh, that's cool. It's cool. It's the open.
People, Yeah. Right? So people, yeah. So the thing, and I am curious when you said about 1974 and they divided the country into four regions and then you said it was A, B, and then D and E. What happened to C?
I don't know because I'm looking at the very old, here's how the regions line up. And it went up into Canada, and I don't see a C. Of course, it wouldn't be beyond our history with the PRCA for them to leave a letter out here and there. But it's A, B, D, and E. And I don't know what C happened. I don't know. But back to your original question. So there is 12 circuits that they established. There's a 13th, which is all of Canada now. So there's a 13th circuit. About Mexico, which is really interesting because last year at the Open, they are allowed, the Mexican Federation of Rodeo is allowed to send one invitee, okay, I think in every discipline. And interestingly enough, the Hispanic guy that they sent, Hector Cardona, won the NFR Open last year. He won it. Now, I couldn't find him in any of the standings, but he came from Mexico, one bull rider, and he won it, which I think is cool. So that's how Mexico gets represented, is through the Mexican Federation of Rodeo. They send, you know, there's one invitation sent to them. I assume it's in all the disciplines, but I know it works in the bull riding because he won it.
I will say this too, to clarify, because I don't think we've said it for the nuts and bolts for people who don't know. Two people from each circuit qualify, the year-end winner and the finals champion. So those are the two people from each circuit who advances now to the NFR Open in Colorado Springs. I do think it's fun, because not many people will remember it, that the first ever DNCFR, which I was lucky enough to get to go and work, late, absolutely extraordinary South Dakota cowboy Brian Fulton was the timed event director at the first DNCFR, and Oregon's NFR bronc rider Butch Knowles, who everybody knows as Mr. Cowboy Channel now, but you know, he was an NFR bronc rider. He was the first ever rough stock director of the DNCFR. So I thought that was kind of cool. But the object, make no mistake, originally from people who were at the table for that, was to give, it was to provide a center stage and big money to the people who weren't going to travel for whatever reason. That was the original intent.
That was the competitive side. The secondary side of it, Kendra, was they were hoping to start to create these organizing groups in these regions to sell sponsors and to generate money locally. Because I've got this old sheet that I found that was like, it's really cool. Where's it at? But it was like listed the sponsors. And I don't know what year this is, but for instance, because I think this is kind of cool. It says Circuit 7. Well, I want to use one of these weird circuits that was a weird name. Ah, here, Circuit 4, the Montana Summer Circuit sponsors. Ross Dolvin, $20. Rainier Brewing, $500. That's a big one. In one of these other circuits, but I just thought it was cool. Goodwin Ranches, $35. So, you know, they thought not only will this give the weekend warriors some opportunity to win some money and to get a buckle and to get some credit within their region. But maybe we can start to organize, you know, get a little more density further out in sponsors and recognition for rodeo cowboys, and
kind of grassrootsy.
Yeah, it's grassrootsy, but the problem, well, we'll get to that. Let's continue to talk about the evolution of the circuit system.
Well, I'll say, okay, I remember this clear as a bell. Jake Barnes and Clay Cooper they're like brothers to me. They're 7-time world champion team rippers, but you know, they won that first DNCFR, and they won, as far as I know, it's still a record for national circuit titles. Well, I remember, I don't know if it was the third or the fourth time they won it or whatever, Jake saying to me, Kendra, we shouldn't be allowed to be here. I feel bad. Like, these guys deserve their own day in the sun. And, you know, I feel like our hands are tied because we're allowed to be here and it's too much money to sit at home. Like, I'd be an idiot not to come because I can. And by the way, originally, Money One at the DNCFR did not count for the world standings. Well, it does now. Imagine the monkey wrench, you know. And so, holy cow. There are a lot of twists of how things have evolved, because when it was originally made for the Circuit Cowboys, but then, you know, that was kind of way back to the era of the right to work law and all those different things. Like there's all these things to factor in, but I feel like Casey Field said that to me at one time too. Like, man, I, you know, in a way they felt sort of awkward to go, but how do you not for that much money?
Okay, well, we'll get into how the money impacts it, because I think that's has impacted it. But you don't just decide to go to a circuit. So we need to clarify that for the to a circuit finals, for the non-rodeo people. There's rules in place that allow you to qualify for a circuit finals. Each circuit has a finals. And essentially, you have to notify as a cowboy what circuit you're in. And it goes by your address on your card. That's your circuit of record. And you can compete in other circuits as a non-resident, or you can tell them the circuit that you're choosing to compete. But here's what's interesting is that depending on the size of the circuit, how many rodeos they have, everybody, that kind of, there's a certain amount of rodeos that you have to compete in that circuit to be eligible. That's thing number one. And, you know, some of them it's 22 rodeos. And by the way, it's more if you're a non-resident. So in some of them I saw it was 22. If that's your designated circuit, you got to go to 22 rodeos. And if you're non-resident competing, it was 29. And, you know, but it's different for each circuit. I think it's the 1540 rule, but it's different. And then, so that you have to meet those that criteria first. Then it's the top 12 on average, because the circuits can actually decide, believe it or not. They can do 8, 10, or 12 in each discipline. Almost all of them are doing 12, okay? But they could choose which ones. And so there's two, you know, you got to compete in 20-something events or whatever your circuit, depending on your rodeos, requires, minimum. And then you have to be in the top 12 in money earned to get invited to the circuit finals. So that's step one. And so you don't, you know, if Casey, if any of these guys went to 22 rodeos in a circuit, Kendra, and they won and it's their home circuit, because the flip side of what you're saying is all those people that bought a ticket to that circuit and their guy's a Utah guy, they want to see him at the circuit finals, regardless of how good he is, right? He might kick their butts. That's simple to fix. Just get better and beat Casey.
And okay, major plot twist in recent years was, additionally, if you're going to count a rodeo towards your minimum to qualify to go to your circuit finals, you have to count it as an official rodeo in the world standings. Well, the intent, my understanding from talking to cowboys, a lot of cowboys, is that the intent was to keep the big dogs out of the circuit finals. But in actuality, what ended up happening was a lot of guys switched circuits. And so
Well, hold on. Let's clarify that. So you're saying they switched a circuit because those rodeos are a part of your official count. They went to a circuit that had bigger rodeos, more money to win, right?
Well, I have an example. This is a straight example from the Wilderness Circuit Finals. I have the numbers that are the minimum. So if you're a resident in the Wilderness Circuit Finals, you have to go to 15 rodeos minimum to get to your circuit finals. If you're a non-resident, you have to go to 22. Okay. But let's just take one event. Let's just take the tie down roping. And if you're a wilderness circuit person, let me read to you the tie down roping. First, Cole Clemens from Florida. Second, Riley Webb from Texas. Third, Zach Youngblood from Louisiana. Fourth, Kincaid Henry from Texas. Fifth, Dylan Hancock, Texas. Sixth, Tuff Cooper, Texas. Seventh, Shane Hanchey. It gets all the way to eighth place before Braden Rowe from Idaho is at that circuit finals. And I'll say this. This is a fair example. Britt Bedke from Oakley, Idaho, missed his circuit finals. He lives there. He missed his circuit finals by one. He ended up 13th. He won over 13,000 at circuit rodeos. You know, I'm not going to argue either way. I could argue it either way. I feel like if either of us was an attorney, we could argue for this both ways. But like, think about it, since we pride ourselves in looking from all different angles and points of view here. If you're a legitimate circuit cowboy in the wilderness circuit and you're getting clobbered by people who are coming from elsewhere, I mean, it's interesting. Interesting is a freaking weak word here, but.
What is the purpose of non-resident cowboys, cowgirls being able to be in circuit finals? Or different, you know, non-resident circuit finals. Maybe I missed a point, but a circuit final would be for that area. I don't know why other non-residents would be allowed to even compete.
Because they changed the rules. They changed the rules and they said, if you're in the wilderness circuit, if you actually live there, you have to go to a minimum of 15 and for your money, for you to be eligible for your circuit finals. And if you're from Louisiana, Florida, Texas, or anywhere else, you have to go to 22, and these but guys that, made
that's
the decision.
My point. What was the justification? But I mean, what's the justification of the rule?
Is this 22 rodeos in that circuit had someone enter that wouldn't have entered? Riley Webb went to 22 rodeos in Utah, and he might not have if it was, so. Other rodeos benefited from getting to see Riley Webb compete because of this opportunity. So there's two sides to the coin. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think it's great that, you know, I'm always trying to find solutions. It would be nice to think about maybe there being a minimum, like X amount of non-residents qualify, something like that. Right. That way the bulk, cause just like Kendra Red, which is, that's great news, Kendra. You go through the list and you go down, what, did you go through eight that are not even from Idaho?
This is seven, but I mean, these are guys, every single one of them is going to the NFR this year. And then, I think you used the term Joe Bob Seven Pick and String or something a few episodes ago, but I'm just saying, if you're a legit circuit guy, you know, you work all week and you can practice, you know, sometimes you run home on your lunch hour or whatever. I'm not saying that these guys are bad people. They're following the rules. I also have a heart for people who are legitimate circuit people. I know, like I said, the intent with this making you have to official rodeo to count it toward your circuit count to also make you have to count it toward the world standings and use up one of your rodeos, you know, was to keep the big dogs, explained to me, and every single person ever to a person, they said it that way, was explained to keep the big dogs out of these circuit finals. But it didn't play out that way. It played out in people switching circuits a lot, and they are following the rules to do it.
So is there a situation where someone could be a champion of multiple circuit finals?
No. You have to, when you get your card, you have to commit to your circuit right then and there.
No, but if I'm a non-resident and I go to one circuit and win it and then win my own circuit.
No, you declare your circuit when you get your card for a whole season. So
he's saying, can a non-resident that qualifies for a circuit finals and wins the circuit finals, they're the circuit champion as a non-resident?
Absolutely, yes.
But then can't I go, if I qualify for my home circuit final and I win that as well?
Yeah.
No, you can't declare two circuits in one season.
No, I understand that, but So like I have to decide that I'm going to be a non-resident competitor in this circuit, and I can't compete.
If you're Cole Clemens from Florida, you declared the Wilderness Circuit is your circuit, you cannot also go to the Southeastern Circuit Finals, which is where your residence would be. And by the way, I feel slightly embarrassed about saying that about the Wilderness Circuit Finals, but a year goes so fast that in my mind, I'm like, Stetson Wright just got hurt at the Wilderness Circuit Finals. That was last fall. Anyway, that's my mind spins sometimes. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
You can only compete in one circuit finals?
Yes.
Or one circuit in general?
No.
Well, you can go to rodeos everywhere.
But, you know, one that counts towards. So you're in. So at the beginning of the year, whether like he lives in, you know, Clemens lives in Florida. He did the Wilderness Circuit. He doesn't have any standing in any other circuits.
Oh, he's not in the circuit standings in any other circuit. No, that's not, he's not allowed to do that. So, but I think another fun kind of fun fact stuff is like in Texas, there's a couple things that stood out to me from the Texas Circuit Finals. One, they have four rounds when I've never seen another circuit finals have more than three. You could win more money there, but then like they also said, like Houston doesn't count because it's so much money and it's such limited entries. So those are sort of interesting, you know, the opportunity is to win, you know, a lot more money. And, you know, you could argue that too. You could say, well, should all circuit finals pay the same? Or is it just, hey, more power to you if you can raise up a bunch more money. So I've heard cowboys talking about it, and there are definitely a variety of opinions on that.
Well, it's not. So that kind of goes back to, so I'm going to bring in another little sports analogy. It irritates me that at the Olympics, like, is it fair in basketball at the Olympics that the greatest NFL players in the world are on the Olympic team? That I thought, and I did a little research on this. It was actually in 1986 when the IOC allowed professionals to compete in the Olympics. And their definition for professionals was people that earn a living competing in the sport. An amateur was someone that doesn't get paid. However, if you look at sports now, all the college athletes are getting paid, right? The new rules of college athletics, they're all getting paid. And so then I started thinking about rodeo, these circuit guys, are they quote unquote amateurs? Are they open? But they get paid if they win. So they're not going to rodeos, not getting paid. So the NFR Open, to your point, Kendra, the NFR Open, the circuit system's lost its vision because of money, right? And the fact that this counts towards world standings and these guys are playing the game and they should play the game. But for me, in a circuit, I understand that we need to try to do something for these circuit contestants, but the same thing's the fans. You know, the fans that buy a ticket to the Wilderness Circuit Finals are not going to complain when, like, I remember Hanchy there last year, right? And these guys, you know, seeing these great guys compete at the Wilderness Circuit Finals is advantage ticket buyer, advantage rodeo committee. And, you know, we also see all of these circuit rodeos that don't fill their entries. So it kind of makes me not feel sorry, right, for the local guy. I mean, I guess it does. But you can't just give them you can't say, well, I'm sorry, you know, Billy, one string, pig and string. We're sorry you can only go to 8 rodeos a year and they got to be within 75 miles. And we're going to guarantee you a spot at the
first. But that doesn't really apply because he's not eligible anyway. If he only went to 8 rodeos, he hasn't put himself in the hat.
Okay, 15. Good Lord, you fact check.
And also, Aunt Susie.
You should be a part of the debate fact check team.
Aunt Susie, you know, she's not going to come if Joe Bob Ate Pig and Strings isn't there. And hey, you know what? There have been some extraordinary circuit cowboys, by the way. How about Bill Huber? Remember him? Yep. Cody Huber's dad, he was like, wow. And did really, really well, you know, when he went head to head, you know. But anyway.
The system still helps, because if you listen to the announcers that are at these small rodeos, Greg, you've heard this. At times, the only credentials that they may have for a contestant is their circuit credentials, right? And at least those are documented. Hey, here's, you know, Billy Joe Five Strings, and he placed 12th in the, you know, circuit C, the missing circuit.
Yeah, but you know what might be really cool about Billy Joe Eight Pig and Strings is he might run the local chapter of the 4-H and be, you know, and be the bank manager down at the local, or run the gas pump at the Circle K or whatever. I mean, people love that. We're not against anybody. We're kind of for everybody.
If he can't catch a cold, you can pull for him. But if he never catches a calf.
Oh, you think? Right? I think the people who miss every calf should make their circuit finals. Come on now.
Well, you're fact checking me on 8 or 18. Oh, by the way, contract personnel, because I like to give them a little love, because all you want to talk about is the contestants. The contract personnel for the circuit finals rodeos. They have to work 4 sanctioned rodeos in a circuit. And then just like the NFR, the committees for each circuit. Okay. Pick if you've worked the right amount of rodeos in the circuit. And the other thing, we'll test for you, Kendra, money for circuit finals. What research have you done for money distributed from, because I'm always trying to find something. I mean, I got all these notes and you've stole all of them. How is the money distributed from the big guys at the PRCA down to the circuits? Do you know?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Okay, here we go. You're going to find this interesting. In 1978, in the Badlands Circuit, the Saddle Bronc rider won $441. It's cool, right? In 2024, if a guy won all the rounds and the average at the same circuit finals, he would win $10,705. So there's like we've said, there's an immense amount of growth in the money. And here's what I think's interesting. Sponsor funds distributed to circuits from the PRCA. That's what I was talking about, right? There's money pushed down into the circuit levels from the Las Vegas agreement. And, you know, I think it's interesting. The current sponsors that are putting money down or is getting allocated down to the circuits is Las Vegas Events, LVCVA, both of them Las Vegas, Cinch, Tenda, I don't even really know what that sponsor is, Tenda, and Ram. That money gets pushed down, but here's what I think is interesting. Total sponsor money for 2024 for each circuit is $109,000. Actually, $107,707. Rough breakdown is $13,700 per discipline. And that breakdown, I guess, messes up a little bit if there's steer rope in Kendra. But here's a couple other really interesting facts. Barrel racing does get equal portion. Breakaway doesn't get any allocation for funds to the circuit level.
Interesting. Hmm.
So barrel racing does, breakaway doesn't, but here's the deal, you know, that $13,000 is pushed down from PRCA down into the circuits for these circuit finals. Sponsor funds, like a host committee, they get about $17,000 of money to help put on the event. Total sponsor funds for the circuit gets $48,000 that they can use every year at their discretion in their circuit. I don't know what they do with it. That'd be interesting.
This is absolutely great. Like a round of applause for the PRCA to make sure that this happens.
And they're distributing.
But that it goes on down. That's fantastic.
It goes on down. And they also will match. They'll match. PRCA will match 4,000 in matching funds and prize money for any over what they're distributing down. Now, what's interesting to me is if you start to look at these circuits, now that I have this number of 13,000 and I start to look at what the circuits are adding, I'm saying, hey, boys, I know what Days of 47 is doing and adding money. And a lot of these circuit finals aren't adding a whole lot of money on top of what they're getting from the PRCA. So I thought those were interesting.
It is really interesting. And it's also, like, you know, of note that most circuit finals are, as with so many radios, run by volunteers, right? And so, you know, there is that. I mean, you start throwing out matching funds to Tony Reyna in Texas, and you don't think he's going to max that out, which, I mean, more power to him. But, you know, people can win a pile at a circuit finals like that, and it counts toward the next season's world standings. That is very significant.
Well, and a couple things as we continue to explore this that I thought was interesting. So the circuit finals typically happen after, most of them, after the 30th. So all of the money from every circuit finals as it relates to national championships goes to the next year, all of it, regardless of when they happen. That goes there. The money that they win counts for their 2024 circuit standings during that year, 24. And the progression to the Open, I think, is interesting. So you said it earlier. You said that the circuit, we talked about how you qualified to your circuit finals, right? And then the average winner and the winner of each discipline goes to the Open, right?
The year end.
Goes to the Open in Colorado Springs. That's two from each circuit, including the Maple Leaf circuit, the Canadian circuit, and one from Mexico. And then I'm pretty sure the top four out of the Open, because we're talking about kind of real progression, sports progression, the top four from Colorado Springs, the NFR Open, then, or is it the top two? Let's see. The top four, the winner in each discipline of the Open goes to Puyallup, where the top four then go to the Governor's Cup. So you could be the guy that won the bull riding from the Mexico one, he gets to go to Puyallup. If he's in the top four, he gets to go to the Governor's Cup. And, you know, but the interesting thing is, now I don't think there's enough money in just that little progression. There's probably enough to qualify you to the NFR, but there's so much money in the sport now that it takes more than, you know, you're not just going to hand pick your way through a few events in this playoff series and get to the NFR now.
Unless you're Scott Gunther, who just pulled off a freaking Hail Mary, hardly going to any rodeos, but that was amazing what he did this year. And I'm making an assumption that the reason that the breakaway ruppers don't get an equal cut is because it's not considered a standard event, correct?
It sort of
has to be, right? Because the barrel racing is a standard event and it's at the NFR. The breakaway roping is not a standard event. It's still optional for committees as far as I'm.
Because it's not at the NFR. So there's none of that big LVCV money that pushes down because it's not approved through the NFR. I assume there's a reason, you know, and here's the deal, you know, that part of this sport's growing so strong and spectators love it, by the way. You know, I've heard people say, well, it's only 2 seconds long, but spectators do love breakaway. They're pretty girls riding fast horses. The only negative from a production standpoint of breakaway is it happens so fast, right? It happens so fast. The other side negative is if a girl backs into the box and it takes her 45 seconds to do 2 seconds of work because she's got to get her rope right. And, you know, that can be a little long sometimes with some of these breakaway ropers. But at Salt Lake, they backed in and nodded, and the crowd loves it. The crowd loves the event. And so it'll be interesting to see how this goes. Because I always said, I mean, I remember before breakaway started, you know, we were one of the first rodeos to equal money on it. But I remember thinking, you know, in college, it's over. You know, we had that conversation, Kendra, somewhere down. You know, college, you know, how is it that you do this all the way through college? So, you know, is goat roping next, right? I mean,
goat tying.
Goat tying, yeah. Well, yeah, I guess they're already roped and staked, but you know.
Well, yeah. Cost me my right knee, and for what?
It cost the goat. Anyway. So we did cover a lot, but let's just kind of recant here a little bit. The initial, because the point of this, point of view, so we talked about a lot of history and how the circuit finals work, which was very interesting for me, because I really, when we first talked about the circuits, I was like, you know, I still don't really understand how the circuits are valid to the overall game. And in doing research, I see how it's valid to the overall game. And the initial purpose of them was to allow the circuit people, and it still gives them some opportunity to shine, Kendra, in their circuits. But it is getting overridden. I think the point here is it's getting overridden by the money and the fact that all of it qualifies to the NFR. I mean, if you look at the three rodeos for the Pioneer Week in Utah, where it's, you know, $1.6 million in 5 days, I can understand why those people are coming over, right, in that 1 week to win that money.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, there's a lot of evolution that's gone on and a lot of change. And
Would you change it, Kendra?
Well, here's one thing that has never changed since the beginning of time for professional rodeo. The majority of the membership are non-NFR contestants. That's to me like the flashing red light. Like, we need to have, I think Jake Barnes was right back in 1987. I think he still has a very valid point. The circuit people who make up the majority of the membership deserve a day in the sun. I think that that's, you know, I don't blame one single person who's making a living doing this for they're all operating within the rules. They're all taking their best shot at what's best for them and their families. They're all, you know, it's gamesmanship, it's strategy. This is 2024, but I can have a heart for people who, I mean, they're just, it's not in the cards for whatever reason. It's not in the cards for them to be out there full time. And so when they get swooped, I do at least see it from their point of view also.
What would be your solution? I love it when we uncover the situation, but would your solution be greater distribution of winnings further down the pike? Mandatory, like communistic type thing? Like,
no, yeah. Stop.
Well, I'm asking what the solution is, because these guys are there. The flip side of that is there's guys like Junior and Tuff. And, you know, if you ask Ty Murray, right, maybe you should get, you know, these guys, they're elite at what they do and they deserve the right to win everything they can win.
I completely agree with you. All I'm saying, and I don't think it's not our place to make the rules, but it is our place to open the conversation wide open and show everybody all the viewpoints. And then it's up to the people in the, you know, positions of power, everybody get together and figure it out. But the people, the circuit guys, the true circuit guys deserve a voice at the table also. And I feel that that's fair. And so, no, I'm not a communist, Tommy Joe.
No, but I'm asking because there's a little bit too much in our country today of handing out blue ribbons and making sure everybody has an opportunity to win. Your best opportunity to win is go out and kick someone's butt and beat them. That's your very easiest way to win, by the way, and get your blue ribbon is to win.
Well, here I'll also say in support of what you just said, you know, the top 15 types who, you know, a lot of wonderful people, super talented, they could also make the argument, well, if you're a true circuit guy and there are 40 rodeos in this circuit and I can only make it to 22 of them, well, you have such an advantage on me. If you can't beat me at me going to, you know, I mean, you can argue this all different ways. But it's like if you, we could draw the card that says you're going to litigate it this way and you're going to litigate it that way, or we could toss a coin and we could both make very valid arguments. But what we're trying to do is go, okay, what makes the most sense to the overall business? What, you know, there's kind of got to be something for everybody. You cannot slam the door in the face of the majority of your membership and have it worked out forever, indefinitely, right?
So you're.
I'm not saying that's what's happening. I'm not saying that's what's happening. I'm just saying we all, everybody, every member deserves a voice, and I'm not saying they don't have it right now. But I think that that's fair, and we're showing all the different viewpoints to have the conversation, and I think that's our job.
In an association that is made up by membership, everybody deserves a voice. By the way, associations often have a hard time progressing because there's so many voices that, and too many people to make happy along the way. You gotta make sure that the losers are happy. And sometimes that restricts advancement.
It's impossible to make everybody happy, period.
It is impossible. And, you know, I'm sitting here, I think overall, at first I was like, I'm going to find a bunch of cons in the circuit system. I'm not finding a bunch of cons in this now, personally, Kendra. I mean, the one thing you state is that its original goal of giving more opportunity to these circuit people has been washed a little bit through money and circumstances and rules. However, it's still offering opportunity. There's restrictions in place. You still have to go to 22 rodeos. I mean, there are, it's hard for me to call out a blatant con now in the current circuit system. The NFR Open, I think, is fantastic. And qualifying to Puyallup and then on to the Governor's Cup and all of that.
More money and more opportunity in rodeo. We're all for that. We're all for, you know, progress. We're all for that. So there's a plenty of common ground to start, to have this conversation from. But I don't, you know, do we ever get to the final, finish line? Probably not, because again, it is impossible to meet the needs and make every single person happy. It is not going to happen. But
you could do it, but it's that word that I say that everybody hates, and that's tearing. Oh my God. Right. Where you start to classify these rodeos and you do it. You work your way off and you swim in your pond until you get big enough to jump the dam. And then you swim in the other pond and you jump the dam. But that means that the guy swimming in the small pond can't have the same shot at the big pond. Right. I mean, it's, again, you would have to implement rules that some in the smaller pond wouldn't like. But that's how you do that.
Yes. And I've been in on so many of those conversations in trucks or on tailgates or whatever. But it's like, the buy-in factor, because where some of the biggest dogs would say it'd be better for those guys who don't win as much because they'd be in their pond where they could have more success. But then they're like, but those guys don't want to admit that they can't beat me all the time. You know, so that, there's a cowboy conversation there.
I was gonna say, isn't the circuits kind of like the big fish in the little pond? You know,
well, it is now.
There's a lot of big fish swimming in this little pond right now.
There's a lot of big fish in these finals because the money counts to the NFR and it's big money now, right? Mm-hmm. And you come out of the circuits and you get into the NFR Open, and by the way, you get into Puyallup, and by the way, you get into the Governor's Cup. So yeah, as you start to create these threads.
Also, by the way, now, because some of the limited rodeos in the winter, the buildings, is based on 2025 earnings. Well, as of October 1st, these guys, what they're winning at these circuit finals counts for 2025. So if you just kick butt at the Texas circuit finals, based on that alone, you can get into, some of the limited entry winter building rodeos. So, I mean, the incentives are gaining ground all the time.
There's a lot of reason for these guys to go to these, to get into a circuit, the right circuit, and to win it. And, you know, but again, I'm trying to think of solutions. And so if Casey, I mean, and again, this, but what are you going to do? Again, I try to come up with something brilliant, but short of telling Casey, okay, you only get to ride with one spur. I mean, what do you,
well, you know, remember like in my lifetime, you know, when I'm a kid, Leo Camarillo wasn't allowed to go to an amateur rodeo. Well, then here came some people with their different lawsuits, and then the right to work law kicked in. And now you might see a world champion ducking off to some, you know, to the rodeo in Lipan or Weatherford or whatever, you know,
well, because but they're not going to win the right to work lawsuit. There's been some history about that. And what I heard a judge say is, here's the deal. If you want an association like the PRCA is like a country club. If you want to play in that country club, then you agree to their rules. You don't come and say, oh, I want to play in the country club, but I want to wear blue jean tee back while I'm hitting golf. You can't do that. You can't have both. So you're right on right to work, but there's a limit there. These contestants are choosing to be a part of this association and it has its rules. And when you do that, you give up the right to say what you think for your position is entirely fair. And there is recent history that we're both aware of that shows that you're not going to win that right to work battle.
Well, that rule book took a really long time to, you know, get to where it's at. So,
well, how? I got nothing overly funny to add to this. I thought it was an interesting conversation. I thought we a very interesting conversation. You know, for me, I like to. I'm hats off to the PRCA for pushing money down into the circuits, right? I
absolutely,
think that's real money that's being pushed down. And thank you to Vegas and Ram and all those sponsors that their money is getting allocated down. They deserve credit for helping these circuits. Hats off to all these circuit committees that bust their butts to put on a good circuit finals. They try very, very hard in a time of year that's very, very hard to do well and sell tickets. Thank you, circuit finals committees, for what you do and the opportunities. It may not be perfect, but these opportunities to not, like we said, sell used cars when you retire are all in part due to the problems that we're saying are in and around the redistribution of wealth within the circuit system. So cool stuff. Final word, Greg, you first, and then we'll let the communist give her final word. I'm kidding, Kendra. Sorry.
I didn't really understand the circuit system. So this was enlightening to me. It gives me a little, but I do know that those committees that put on those circuit finals are shoestring budgets and they do a great job for their circuits.
Ms. Santos.
I leave this conversation. The biggest thing on my mind at this particular moment is gratitude for the people who volunteer to work all year long to take their very best shot to give these contestants a worthy circuit finals. It's a great reward. I don't care if you're a top 15 type or a true circuit contestant. We need to really appreciate these people. And so I'll just say thank you to every single person who's had a hand in putting on or volunteering at a circuit finals.
They're great events, great money. And you know, we're heading up to the NFR and we've got a few more podcasts. We'll be letting you guys know where we'll be during the NFR pretty soon. We will be live for 10 days and we sure hope, you know, spinners come find us and shake our hand. But a little challenge goes out. We've got a few coming up. If there's a topic, I mean, we can only talk about, you know, number 16, not getting in and who got in and congratulations. I mean, the NFR is coming. But if there's a topic coming up in and around that you want to hear, you want us to do some digging on, you want us to pull out our iPhone list and do some calls, shoot it to us via text or email. And we look at all of it, and we will, if it's a good topic that we think we might be able to uncover something you didn't know about, we will roll up our sleeves. We'll dig down in there. We'll argue about it. We won't always agree, but we'll tell you what we find out. And you probably won't agree with me, and most of you agree with Kendra, and that's fine. And Greg has no opinion. So that's what they do in most cases. So there you have it. Send us some ideas. That's what I was getting at. Send us some ideas if you want to hear something. Other than that, on behalf of the wonderful Kendra Santos, I know I've called her a communist and I've said things, but she's brilliant. And I think she enjoys the challenge of having to put up with me. Thank you to Greg Teagarden, who mixes all this, makes it up, brings in a point of view. Thank you to all of you that listen to us for an hour. Thank you very, very much. We're growing. Our fan base is growing. We're doing good. We're going to be at the NFR. We're going to have a lot of fun. And we're going to be back with you in 2 weeks for No Spin. Until then, please be safe. Remember what counts in life. That's your family and the people you love. Don't take that for granted. Have a great, blessed day. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.